From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's going on, beautiful people? It is Monday. Yes, the start of another week. And hope it is a productive one for you all. Wow. That's all I can say about today's show. We are going to be talking about, of course, a hot button topic, to say the least. And I'm pretty sure that many of you have heard about this. It not only made the airwaves in the world of sports, but in the world of our popular culture as we know it. Every news station, every entertainment station, every newspaper that I read had this as a headliner. Donald Sterling, of course, the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers organization, made some comments that stirred up a lot of controversy. I could not believe what I had heard and what I had read about when diving into this story. And I could not believe when I read about the organization that he is in charge of and the association that he is a part of, the National Basketball Association, out of all of the Major League North American sports. He makes comments that rubs a certain race the wrong way, a race that occupies more than 80% of that league. I could not believe it, folks. And later on in the show, not right now, I'm going to bottle it up right now, until we dive into the second segment of the show. But boy, do I have some strong thoughts on it. I'm sure many of you out there have some strong thoughts on it as well. If you didn't hear the audio, we'll play just a quick snippet of it for you to get the conversation started. And we'll dive right into it. So we'll be talking about the Donald Sterling story in just a moment. But on a lighter note, there were some great things that happened this past weekend when it came to MSU athletics, including the MSU green and white game. We have some big news concerning the MSU women's golf team, and just so much more. I personally am very, very sore right now. I played in the Battlefield Brawl flag football tournament. For those of you who don't know what the Battlefield Brawl tournament is, it's a pretty, a very, very cool and admirable charity event. Sponsored by the Duckett brothers, Todd, of course, and Tico, that they hold this every year. And it's an event that takes place. It's a flag football tournament that takes place trying to raise money for childhood illnesses and diseases, started by a very inspirational man by the name of Justin, who almost lost his life to brain cancer and wanted to do something to give back to the community and raise money for other children who are going through the same, if not worse, circumstances. I got a chance to meet Justin, who was one inspirational guy. He actually played on my team. He was on my team, actually, throughout the entire day. And so was Todd Duncan and Otis Wiley. Even that's a lot of talent on the team, okay? And we still lost back-to-back games, and I was still going the record saying that the teams that we were playing were cheating, because they had been playing with each other for 5 years. I mean, we played this one team called Livestrong. I mean, they had plays drawn up. They had, you know, it was just unbelievable. I mean, they had the huddle going on while we're sitting there. I just met these guys the first day, and we had to go out there and play this team. It was like the Dallas Cowboys or something. It was unbelievable. But it was a fun time, man. And, you know, even though it's flag football, hey, that all goes out the window on certain plays, okay? I got tackled a few times. I made some tackles a few times. It was on and popping, okay? It was a fun time, though. So shout out to Todd and Tico and everybody who showed up. There were a few other, local TV and radio personalities that were there as well. I got a chance to meet Francesca Amaker of WLNS TV 6, who's the morning personality over there. Andre Hudson. Drew Neitzel was there. We played against Drew Neitzel's team. I said it was cheating. Okay. I'm just saying, okay. It was a fun time though. And they raised a lot of money, a little over $11,000, for that charity organization. They got me hooked now. I got to come back next year. But yeah, again, folks, we're taking your calls though throughout this entire hour. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. So while you guys are calling in, let's get you caught up on all of the weekend action that was in the world of sports. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this April 28th, 2014. Man, it's almost May. Okay, all right. Michigan State, they held its annual green and white spring football game on Saturday down at Spartan Stadium. 35,000 people came out to enjoy the game this weekend. A little short of course, Mark D'Antonio's goal of 50,000 people, but it was a fun time nonetheless. Connor Cook, he threw a 2-yard touchdown pass to Josiah Price with 27 seconds left to lift the white team to a 20-13 victory over the green team on Saturday. Now, Cook, who led the Spartans to a Big Ten title and, of course, that incredible Rose Bowl season last year, he threw for 159 yards and 2 TDs, although he was intercepted twice. He was sharp in the first quarter, leading the white team to an early 13-0 lead. He also directed the winning drive, of course, at the end with that TD pass to Price. We'll break down the spring game in just a sec here on Current Sports and tell you what we saw and just the overall future outlook on how this team is progressing in the spring and how they're looking on the brink of course, trying to defend that Rose Bowl championship title. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Give us a call now. Also last night, the MSU Football Awards banquet was held in consensus All-American corner. Darquez Denard, yes, who became the first Spartan to win the Jim Thorpe Award as the nation's top defensive back, has been selected most valuable player by his teammates at the annual Spartan Football Awards banquet again, which was held yesterday before a crowd of excess of 800 people, excuse me, at the Kellogg Conference Center. Now, just to list some of the other awards that were received by other players during that night. Don't want to list all of them. We'll be here all day. But the Downtown Coaches Club Award went to the outstanding senior on offense. That went to wide receiver Benny Fowler. The Downtown Coaches Club Award for outstanding senior defense went to linebacker Danico Salen, Max Bulla, cornerback Darquez Denard, and safety Isaiah Lewis. The Outstanding Senior Special Teams Award went to Kyle Ellsworth. The President's Award for Perseverance went to offensive guard Blake Treadwell, defensive tackle Tyler Hoover, linebacker Jairus Jones, and defensive tackle Makaija Reynolds. The Outstanding Detroit Area Player Award, known as the Dan Zeger Award, went to right receiver Tony Lippett. The upfront award, which goes to the outstanding offensive lineman, that went to Blake Treadwell. And the outstanding underclass back award for offense went to Connor Cook and Jeremy Langford. And on defense, Curtis Drummond. So congrats to all of those I just named and all of those I didn't name for the banquet awards last night at the Kellogg Conference Center for the MSU football team. Well deserved, to say the least, for one incredible team. They also got their Rose Bowl rings. How about that? I'm pretty sure those who are MSU football fanatics went on online to check out those rings. And D'Antonio, he rocked his during the presser after the spring game. Fun stuff. Fun time this weekend and a fun moment of celebration looking back at last year's Rose Bowl win. All right, great news here when it comes to MSU women's golf. The number 25 Michigan State women's golf team, they captured its third Big Ten championship in 4 years and 11th in program history in dramatic fashion yesterday at the Pete Dye course out in French Lick. And, you know, it was a great, great outing for them. The Spartans, they tied for first with OSU, Ohio State, as both teams shot a 31 over par, 895. There is no playoff to determine a conference champion in the Big Ten. Now, needing to seek a birdie, it ended in a dramatic fashion here. Needing to seek a birdie on the last hole with MSU down one stroke. Check out this. Senior Alyssa Farrell, she drained a 9-footer. Not an easy one, folks. A 9-footer on the tournament's final shot to clinch the share of the Big Ten championship. Oh, my goodness. That's unbelievable right there. Now, Michigan State officially received the Big Ten's automatic bid to the NCAA regionals on the tiebreaker, which goes to the team with the lowest cumulative score for all six golfers. It marks the 16th straight year and MSU has advanced to the NCAA Regionals. Now, the 2014 NCAA Division I Women's Golf Championship selections will be announced live on tonight, Monday, April 28th. So we'll await those and give you those later on. And you know what? Things didn't go as well for the MSU softball team, though, which was on the wrong side of a sweep courtesy of the Nebraska Cornhuskers. The Spartans failed to score a run in three games, getting shut out all three games, folks. 2-0, 6-0, and 8-0 to the Huskers. Now, coupled with a previous loss to Central Michigan, MSU lost its last four home games of the year. They will be back in action Friday at Northwestern. And the Lansing Lugnuts, they rode a 6-1 record during their seven-game homestand to improve to 10-12 on the year and slide into fifth place in the Midwest League Eastern Division standings. The Luggies, they earned a 6-5 win on Sunday over the Bowling Green Hot Rods to win the series and are five games back of the Dayton Dragons for the division lead. Now, Lansing will travel to Dayton for an important four-game series this week before returning home to host Western Michigan Whitecaps over the weekend. And the MSU baseball team, again, they scored a three-game sweep over the Northwestern Wildcats, improving, again, 24-17. And get this, yesterday they had 33 hits, 25 runs, a 15-3 win. That's unbelievable. They are off for the week before starting a three-game series at Illinois on Friday. That's impressive. That's impressive stuff right there. And, of course, the Red Wings, folks. The Boston Bruins, they defeated the Red Wings over the weekend to advance into the conference semifinals to face the Montreal Canadiens. Tuukka Rask, he made 31 saves to push the defending Eastern Conference champions over the Wings, 4-2 in Game 5. Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg each scored a goal for the Wings on Saturday, which Jonas Gustafsson, made 29 saves. So the Wings season ends. We'll recap and put a bow on it later on the show, and you can also weigh in on it, 517-355-9527. Also want to note that the finale of the three-game series between the Detroit Tigers and the Minnesota Twins, it was postponed Sunday afternoon due to rain. Justin Verlander, he had been set to start Sunday against the Twins. He will now start Tuesday against the White Sox in Chicago, while Max Scherzer, he will start Wednesday in the second game of that series. And this is pretty cool stuff. This May, two Michigan high schools will host their proms. And you know where they're going to do it at? They're going to do it at the University of Michigan's football field. Yes, the Big House out in Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's style right there. My goodness. Now, the stadium's first school to do this will be Durand High School, which is bringing about 230 juniors and seniors for their prom on May 10th. Dexter High School will follow with about 600 juniors and seniors. That's going to be a real fly prom, all right? You're going to have to dress to impress for that one, okay? You're going to the Big House to have prom. Man, you got to bring it. You got to bring it, man. Oh, prime days, man. It seems like yesterday I was rocking that white tux and driving the Mercedes-Benz. Oh, good stuff. All right, happy prime season, all everybody out there, too. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, and even tweet me. That's right, I'm always on Twitter at Al Martin, WKAR. Also want to note that this week on Current Sports TV, that's right, Wednesday night at 6 p.m., we have a pretty cool guest. He has recently been named the captain for next year's MSU hockey squad, Mike Ferentino. Yes, Mike will join me to talk about this past season with Tom Anastas and company. And, you know, we'll recap all of the latest headliners on what happened for this MSU hockey team throughout the season. Of course, a young team, really young team, but starting to gain experience, of course, as the years go by. Tom pretty encouraged with the way they ended things, but, of course, would have liked to have gone deeper in the season. But still, nonetheless, Mike is going to be interesting to talk to him because he's a sophomore right now, will be a junior next year, and to be named a captain, to be so young and be named that is saying a lot. So I look forward to chatting with him. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience in 2 days, you can do so by going to WKAR.org and signing up for free. at WKR.org. It should be a great time. It always is, each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. All right, well, let's dive into the green and white game, folks. Yes, it was a fun time. 35,000 came out to enjoy the game this weekend. The sun was shining. It was a little chilly, but not too chilly. It was a great time. And at halftime, it was pretty cool because Mark Hollis came out and honored the Rose Bowl team of last year and kind of revved everybody up. It was pretty cool stuff. And then on the field, they even had the logo signifying the Big Ten 2013 Big Ten champions. It was a very, very cool event, and it was very cool. It was lighthearted, of course. Sparty even ran in like he does every year. Sparty got in on the action. Yes, the mascot Sparty. He took the ball and ran in for a short touchdown. It was a fun time, lighthearted time. But at the same time, even though, you know, it's relaxed spring game, green versus white, it still gives you kind of an insight as to how this team will look next year. And it was also pretty cool because the media got a behind-the-scenes look at the North End Zone expansion project, which is, of course, designed to attract recruits who come to Michigan State. But it's a very, very cool project, actually a $24 million project, to be exact here, as they're adding on a new locker room. And, you know, Flozell Adams was there, folks. Yes, a Spartan All-American. He was there and announced that he will be donating $1.5 million to the expansion project, specifically the locker room, and it will be named after his mother. And so that ups the total, definitely. So MSU rolling in the dough. It was a great behind-the-scenes look as, you know, the media got a chance to look at exactly how the project is coming along and what it will look like. And you will get to see a kind of a digital kind of 3D look at the finished product of it on Current Sports TV this Wednesday. We're going to show it to you all. So that's another reason to come on out and enjoy that episode. So, but it was really cool to see Flozell back on campus and to see all of these Spartan alumni, especially those who contributed to that Rose Bowl win last season, to come back and, you know, get their rings and just kind of powwow with Spartan Nation. So it was a great time. Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky now join me. First of all, guys, how you doing? Happy Monday. Have a good weekend.
It was great. You know what? Besides from March Madness, I think we talked about this last week, just an awesome weekend in sports, from the NBA playoffs to the NHL playoffs, granted the Wings losing, but with those two, and then you have the spring game. I mean, this was just a man's weekend. You know,
man's weekend. Well, women too. Women enjoy sports too.
I know that.
So yeah, I feel what you're saying, though. Man, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. There was a lot going on and a lot of interesting things to talk about, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later.
Yes, we will. You know what, Matt? We didn't plan. We didn't call up each other. Excuse me, before today's show. We're kind of like rocking the same shirt here, man. It's kind of crazy,
yeah,
man.
A little weird.
It's a little weird. All right.
Well, it's a good looking shirt, though. Obviously,
you got taste, my man.
Well,
you have a lot of
taste. Same to you.
There we go.
Clearly, we're on the same page.
Somewhere. We are. All right, guys. Well, let's dive into the spring game. You know, I was on Current State this morning talking with Mark Bayshore about it, and it was pretty cool because the spring game, of course, it's a lighthearted, fun game where, you know, fans get to come out, and it's not – the competition is there, of course, because at the end of the day, it was pretty cool because afterwards the players were talking about the losers have to eat, like, Franks and beans. And, you know, the winners get to go out to a steakhouse and enjoy a sizzled steak, which is, you know, it's something to play for right there. But it's still a fun time. And, you know, you kind of get an inside peek as to the personnel of this squad for next season. I tell you what, looking at the game, guys, Josiah Price and Jamal Lyles developing at tight end. That's going to be very, very encouraging to see how that transcends and develops as the season goes on. Of course, the tight end position has been one that's sort of been lacking ever since, in my opinion, ever since Deion Sims, of course, went to the NFL and took his talents. Now, I believe he's with the Dolphins, I believe, right now. But, you know, that tight end position has kind of been kind of the dark horse that I've really wanted to see a player and to kind of emerge in. I think Josiah Price looked great yesterday, as well as Jamal Lyles. He had a few pockets where it was just like, wow. I mean, they have a lot of talent there. It's going to be interesting to see how that transitions throughout the season. How about the defense? I mean, we talked about the defense last week as to how they just keep churning out players who are willing to step up into those roles. Of course, big shoes, especially when you had to talk about the number one defense in the nation last year. Guys like, you know, Isaiah Lewis, Darquez Denard, Max Buller, Danico Salen. I mean, you can go on and on and on. But looking at the defense on Saturday, I'm not too worried about them this season, to be honest with you guys. Interceptions galore. It's a spring game, though. Picks went to Curtis Drummond, safeties Curtis Drummond and Demetrius Cox. Three corners as well. Darian Hicks, I think he's going to be a very, very big force this upcoming season. He had six tackles, led the team with six tackles, also an interception. Ezra Robinson, Jermaine Esmondson, they are all competing right now for the vacant spot, of course, of Darquez Denard, and they all look great. If I had to choose one, though, I thought that Darian Hicks, he was really impressive on Saturday. And how about Tywan Jones and also Trey Wance? They were also impressive. And Jalen Powell is certainly making his case. Of course, the red shirt freshie, he's making his case that, hey, he can play right now. So, Connor Cooked, he looked comfortable. Very, very comfortable, I thought, besides the two picks, of course. I mean, again, it's a spring game, folks. So, I thought that, there were some chances taken throughout the game here and there. But you got to take it with a grain of salt at the end of the day. If there was any weakness, and if there's any worry that I have, I think the defense is intact. I'm very encouraged with them. Now, granted, this isn't going to be the defense that we saw last year. I'm just going to put it out there. I mean, it's hard. It's going to be very, very hard to fill those voids that are going to be left from those who had such a profound impact and the leadership on that defense. It's going to be hard to fill those shoes. They won't be as dominant, but MSU's defense, I think, is in good hands right now. I was encouraged from what I saw Saturday. Offensively, I think the big word for me is maturity now. Connor Cook, clearly the guy. He's the number one guy, so he can step up and just kind of be comfortable knowing that he doesn't have two other guys trying to take his head off for his job. And I think Connor Cook is comfortable now. He looked very comfortable on Saturday. Tony Lippett, I think, is going to be a guy who's going to turn some heads at the receiver position. If there's any doubts that I have right now, I'm really interested to see how that tailback position emerges. Of course, with Jeremy Langford and Nick Hill being the number one and two guys, I think. But as far, if you look, even looking at last season, that was something I always wondered too, because losing Le'Veon Bell as the number one guy, of course, who had an immense amount of success with MSU. I mean, they rolled him left and right when he was here at Michigan State. And his absence, it kind of put a question mark in my mind to say, okay, who's going to step up now as far as the tailback is concerned? Jeremy Langford, he held it down without a doubt. But can he do it this year and be consistent at it and get better? That's the question for me. And as well as Nick Hill. Nick Hill is a really short running back. I'm worried about him. He's kind of injury prone, if you ask me. If he can stay healthy, if those two can stay healthy, I think they can be impactful. But if there's any chink in the armor, I think that's it right now, guys.
See, I don't even know if I would go that far as to you say wouldn't. It's a weakness. I think it's tough to judge a spring game anyway, just because of the nature of the split squad game. You don't have a full offensive line, you don't have a full defensive line.
Right.
So I mean, it's
exactly.
Gonna be tougher for running backs to find holes and get into a rhythm because they don't have their full plethora of linemen blocking for them. So it's almost like an incomplete, I guess, if I was filling out a report card.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you don't know. But I think Langford, I mean, he had, what, eight straight 100-yard games to end the year up until the Rose Bowl last year.
He was great.
I think he's coming along. I think the big thing is going to be depth. I don't think they actually gave Nick Hill enough carries last year. I think he averaged near 5 yards a carry. He was an effective running back when he was in. It's just once Langford emerged and kind of took the reins, he sort of took a back seat. For me, as far as maybe weaknesses or things I might have been disappointed in, and honestly, there wasn't a lot because this was an entertaining game. And when you take into account that this is the team split in half, the fact that they were able to field two teams of the caliber that they were speaks volumes.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a deep team. This is a deep program. They know what they're doing. But as far as weaknesses, I would have liked to see one of the young linebacker prospects step up and have a big day. I think they were quiet as a group in general. I understand that, Ed Davis is out, and he's kind of the next guy up for the breakout linebacking star, along with Tywan Jones.
Yeah, Tywan Jones, yeah.
But, to not have, maybe Bulla or Reschke step up and be like a star of the spring game was a little disappointing to me. Everybody else played well. I mean, the defensive backfield,
boy. It's going to be loaded, dude.
They might not have a guy who is the quality of a Darquez Denard right now, but they have three guys who can step up and make plays at the cornerback spot on the other side of Trey Wayne. So I don't think there's any doubt, any fears, any missteps in the secondary. I think they're ready to go. And as far as the offense is concerned, I do like seeing Josiah Price get involved because the tight ends, going back to the Kirk Cousins days,
right,
they were a big part of the offense. I mean, they had Charlie Gant and Brian Linthicum and Deion Sims all catching passes. And to, you know, they kind of missed that last year. Even though the offense came along and played well at the end of the season, the wide receivers were the big group that stepped up. I mean, Price had his moments, but the tight ends weren't that big factor that you needed to plan for. I think this year they're going to lean on him more, and I think they're going to come through. So I think it's going to be a more diverse, balanced offense this season.
Alex?
Yeah, for me, the big focus of the game were the sophomores. He said it, Jermaine Edmonds himself. You have Riley Bullock maybe floating between the running back. I mean, you have all the kickers who are all sophomores venturing for a first spot. We have a lot of sophomores on this team, even Josiah Price, who are really looking to make a statement and kind of take this team to the next level after some big senior losses. I don't think it's going to come from senior leadership this year. I think it's going to come from the sophomores. And we saw a lot of different sophomores in that game. We saw Damian Terry running the ball. I mean,
yeah, how have we made it this far without mentioning Damian Terry?
Yeah. How did we do that? I mentioned him in the headlines, but yeah, I got some comments.
I'm just interested to see a Michigan State team now with, you mentioned depth. I think that game showed that the depth is there. Although they're playing each other, the offense versus defense, I think you can see that when one guy goes down, you're not having a huge drop off. You're having a lot of guys that can come in and make plays. For me, the biggest star of the game, you guys, had to be a guy by the name of Demetrius Cox, sophomore out of Pennsylvania. This guy was pretty highly recruited coming out. He's a guy that's been a little bit undershadowed with Drummond and Edmondson making some big plays. I think he's a guy that's going to step in at maybe the number three at the number three corner position, or maybe float around between a safety position and really make a play. I mean, he made the game-ending interception. He's a guy that I think did some really nice coverage things on the way in zones. So I'm really looking for Demetrius Cox to really step up. He's a guy that not a lot of people have been talking about in the spring. You hear Demetrius Cooper. You hear Drummond making a big step up and trying to go to the pros. You hear Hicks. But I think Cox is a guy that I think is a little bit undershadowed that we're going to see this year. Josiah Price, for me, is the MVP of that game. I mean, he's gotten bigger. You could see it. He was thrown to last year. This year, he might be the number one target coming into this year, aside from Tony Lippitt, I'd argue.
Possibly.
So I think for me, those are the two big names that I really watch that I think that are going to have a lot of heads turned this year.
Yeah, for me, if I had to choose an MVP, I think the guy who really impressed me was Darian Hicks. I mean, he seemed to be all over the field. You know, six tackles. He had an interception. I mean, he was great. He was really good. It's encouraging for me. Of course, when you lose a guy like Darquez Denard, who was everywhere, I mean, it shows some validation that, okay, they got some corners that can step up, and Hicks was the shining star out of everybody, I thought.
Right, but at the same time, Hicks was playing alongside Darquez Denard as a freshman.
Right,
so at the same time, I'm not surprised by Hicks. So that's why I'd argue that the biggest MVP for me would have been Josiah Price.
He definitely stepped up. And on the other side of the ball, you mentioned Demetrius Cooper kind of in passing, but holy cow. That kid is fast.
He is
big. He looks ready to play. And the fact that they just kind of keep churning out these guys on the defensive line, too, that's going
to
make things easier for everybody.
Shalique Calhoun was great. Two sacks for Shalique.
Flying around the field. And it looks
Demetrius
like they have
Cooper.
Another one. You know, Shalique needs a breather, then they bring on another monster. So it just seems like they're just reloading. And the guys who are up and coming are exciting to talk about. This team's going to be really good.
They are. Like, and you know,
there's no bones about it.
The biggest thing with me, and you know, D'Antonio talked about it. He hit it right on the head. You can't get complacent. And that's the biggest thing. Because when you come off a Rose Bowl, when you have the type of success that you have last season, a lot of people can get fat and happy and get comfortable with that. You know what I mean? And take games for granted. And the biggest takeaway for D'Antonio in that game, which he said it was, he wanted to see how the team, overall team, approached the game. If they want to go out there and approach it as, oh, this is a spring game, laugh and giggles, or were they going to take kind of a serious attitude and get some things done and see how productive they could be. That mindset is going to be key throughout an entire season, game by game, Saturday to Saturday, how they approach and handle success. Because let's be honest here, when teams walk into Spartan Stadium, or when the Spartans are on the road, teams are going to look at MSU and say, yo, these are the Rose Bowl champions. This is not a team. This is not the team of 2 years ago where you look at and look at the track record and say, okay, this is a team on the rise, but they haven't gotten there yet. MSU is there, and teams know it. And the national perception of MSU has totally changed. They're going to have to bring in each and every game, no matter who they're playing. How they handle success is going to be huge. And I think D'Antonio is going to be spreading that message throughout the entire year.
For me, the biggest question mark of the game was at the running back position. And although Jeremy Langford's returning, you saw Damian Terry with a lot of ability. You see Riley Bullock and Nick Tompkins looking for those bigger guys that can replace Nick Hill. Do you look to maybe put them more at a fullback position? How are you going to handle all these different weapons they have that can run the ball? Are you going to start using a little bit of the wildcat? I know that was thrown out there at one point earlier in the offseason. So I want to hear from you guys what you think the solution is for the weapons and how they're going to basically move the ball, running the ball forward.
Well, yeah, like I just said, I mean, that was my, right here, I mean, that's what I had as my kind of question mark or weakness, if you will, for that spring game. Because, you know, you look at Nick Hill, and he's a smaller back. I mean, when you play bigger teams, he has to rely on his speed a lot. And, you know, he's a quick guy. But I've seen games where Nick just can't, you know, get past those bigger defensive backs and find those holes. The way he reads a defense sometimes is questionable for me. Now, granted, you know, spring does a year of development and a spring practice and training does a lot for you. I think he will improve, but just how much is the question. I think Jeremy Langford will be a solid guy you can rely on throughout the season. He just has to stay healthy. That's another thing. You saw, you know, Gerald Holmes. You saw Nick Tompkins. Delton Williams, I wanted to see him so bad, but of course he was on injured reserve. I think he can be a factor as well.
But here's the thing. This is what I'm getting at. Although a lot of the players, injuries, we would have liked to see some, there's no doubt that there's some talent there. I argue that you're wasting time keeping those guys on the bench that could be making plays in the game. I can confidently say that between Jeremy Langford, Delton Williams, and after the spring game, Damian Terry, and even Riley Bullock can all make plays running the ball. So what I'm wondering is, what do you guys think the Spartans can do moving forward with those guys? Are they going to keep filtering in and out? Are you going to give the majority of carries to Langford moving forward? I don't know.
Well, I tell you what. Matt, go ahead.
Well, I think Langford's the guy. I think he earned that last season. He you know, took the lead back role and excelled, you know, beyond all expectations. I do think even last season you saw hints of spreading the ball around as far as running the ball went with guys like R.J. Shelton. I mean, they had that one wishbone formation where they could fake one handoff and then flip it to the guy coming around the edge. And I think with the spring game, I mean, with Terry's 23-yard run, you saw that they have the pieces in place to be extremely versatile in how they run the football. Just because they're lining up in a shotgun with two quarterbacks in the game doesn't mean they're not going to hand it off and run it.
Right.
So I think the amount of versatility that they have is a good problem to have, definitely, because they have so many athletes that can make plays. I mean, they're not hurting for talent anywhere, especially in the backfield. I think they still go with Langford getting a majority of the carries, but they'll spread the other ones around. I mean, there'll be 5 to 10 carries a game where you're going to be getting guys coming from different positions, running from different spots on the field, maybe some more jet sweeps. Maybe they get the screen game more involved this season than they did last year. I mean, there's just a lot of different things you can do. And, I mean, we saw it even in Connor Cook's stat line. It's not overwhelmingly great. I mean, he had 2 picks. He was, you know, about 50%.
Right.
I don't think you still want to rely on his arm too much. You know, they want to be a balanced team offensively, and they have the horses to do it. So I think as far as running the ball goes, it's going to be a big part of the offense. Even more of a concern than the guys running the ball or the guys blocking, I think. I think getting that line together, getting some cohesion, becoming the unit that they were last year is going to be a bigger task than finding guys to carry the ball.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm confident in the coaching staff. You got to realize this, D'Antonio knows what he's doing here. He knows the weapons he has. He knows his personnel. I'm confident that he'll figure it out. He'll find that happy balance. And you got a long time. We still got, 4 months before the first kickoff. So he'll evaluate these guys in the offseason. They'll be fine. Not worried about it at all. All right, guys. Well, next when we come back after the break, we got to talk about a hot-button topic that's really been sweeping the airwaves left and right. Donald Sterling, owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, made some interesting comments, which you'll hear about in just a sec. Don't go anywhere. You don't want to miss this one.
I I'm Jeremy Hobson. The state of Indiana has come up with a new way to combat identity theft and tax fraud, a pop quiz.
There's four questions, and they are questions that only the real taxpayer could answer.
And so far, thousands of people have been denied refunds because of it. That story next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 o'clock.
Hi, I'm WKAR radio station manager Peter Worf. WKAR is your hometown station for mid-Michigan news, people, and places. And if there's a story you think we should be covering, an issue we should discuss, or a person to pay attention to, we'd like you to tell us. Find us at currentstate at WKAR.org, on Twitter at KAR Current State, and on Facebook. Around mid-Michigan and across the state, the WKAR network is here for you on 90.5 FM, AM 870, and WKAR.org.
What's wrong with these Spanish?
They're fabulous. Fabulous. Because you're an enemy to me.
Why?
Because you don't understand.
I don't understand what?
Nothing.
That racism still is alive?
No, but there's a culture.
What is
people
culture?
Steal certain things. Hispanics steal certain things towards blacks. Blacks steal certain things towards other groups. It's been that way historically, and it will always be that way.
But it's not that way in my heart and in my mind.
But maybe you want to adjust to the world.
Oh, boy. Those were the alleged words of Donald Sterling, who is the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers organization. He was found to be recorded, which is, I still would love to know the story of how that conversation, which is a pretty long conversation, got recorded, because, I mean, it was over 5 minutes of Sterling talking to his girlfriend about this issue. The way this issue kind of popped off was Sterling had seen his girlfriend's Instagram, and she happened to be posing with Magic Johnson, of course, MSU standout, NBA legend. Who doesn't know Magic, right? And Sterling was not happy with the picture and, you know, had some choice words about the entire thing, saying, hey, you know, why are you posing with you know, these people, referring to black people. And, you know, it's fine if you want to do other things with them. I won't go into detail exactly what he said and how he said it, but which I'm pretty sure most of you probably know by now after reading the reports of what he said. And it really, it was shocking stuff. You know, I couldn't believe, me personally, I could not believe what I had heard, and more specifically who it came from. Magic was actually on NBA Countdown. Not sure if you all saw this, but he was on NBA Countdown as the NBA playoffs are going on right now. He was on NBA Countdown this weekend to address the whole Donald Sterling incident, and said that, you know, when Magic came to the NBA, you know, he considered Donald a friend. He was one of the first people he met after he got off the plane. You know, he came to his house and everything, and it really caught him off guard when Donald made these comments and angered him. I mean, why wouldn't it? It would anger any black person or any minority for that matter, or anybody who supports you know, just overall, anybody's not racist, this would anger. And the stupidity of the comments just blew my mind. Because, first of all, you talk about a league, the National Basketball Association, which is predominantly African-American, and you're an owner of one of the teams in that association, and you make these comments and are recorded word for word, caught red-handed about it, that completely blew my mind. If you want my opinion on what should happen, he should immediately be removed as Clippers owner, should immediately be bashed away from the entire National Basketball Association as we know it, and should be fine, to be honest with you, without a doubt. And I'm confident that Adam Silver, who is the current commissioner of the National Basketball Association, will make the right decision. He and the entire association will do the right thing here. And if anything, you got to feel for the athletes who are in the National Basketball Association and have to go through this media media episode that is this, and it becomes a huge distraction, more so for the players of the Los Angeles Clippers. I watched that game last night against Golden State, and they looked like a shell of themselves, guys, in that game. I mean, it was clear that this is certainly on their minds. I mean, they came out in their warm-ups, turned inside out as kind of a statement to everybody, letting kind of like a silent protest, if you will, boycotting, you know, the organization in a way, with Sterling still being the owner. And I even thought, thinking about the situation more and more and more, I mean, I just kind of tried to equate this, if, you know, here at WKAR, if my boss happened to make some comments that happened to be racist or something like that, I'd tell you what, I would just immediately quit. Wouldn't even show up for work. That'd be it. And it came to a point when thinking about this that I was before on the brink of the game. I said I wouldn't be surprised if the entire team said, "Hey, we're not playing here. We're done." You know what I mean? Because these comments were racist, but they were so black and white and blatant and in your face that it really just made you just cringe in many regards. And the reaction, I tell you what, the reaction from everybody nationally about this is no surprise at all. And it just kind of opens your eyes, and it opens my eyes too, because sometimes we get caught up in this happy-go-lucky life that we live in day to day to day, and then incidents like this happen, and we're kind of appalled and shocked, and it slaps you in the face sometimes and reminds you that, folks, we still have a long, long way to go when it comes to racism and inequality and that overall perception being totally eliminated from today's society. And racism in sports today and the touch that sports has is starting to, in many social movements, is really mind-blowing to me. Because we talked about the Riley Cooper N-word situation here on the show. We talked about the black quarterback from time to time here on the show and the perception in that regard. We've talked about homosexuality in sports and how that's become a hot-button topic. Sports have really opened a door here and an avenue to have these social touchy conversations that are a reality in day-to-day life for many, many people. And for me, it just really disappoint me. Really disappoint me. And it just served as a reminder that we still have leaps and bounds to go when it comes to the issue of racism and inequality. Guys, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's cringeworthy is probably a good word for it. And the one thing for me is that, you know, people don't seem, you know, people might be surprised that he, you know, that it got released and that there's recordings of it, but people don't normally seem surprised that he did it, because this isn't the first time he's been linked to this kind of remarks or this kind of way of thinking. I mean, Elgin Baylor, who was their GM for a long time, got embroiled in a lawsuit in 2009 and described the Clippers organization as a Southern plantation atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't throw that around lightly.
No.
So it just seems like this guy is kind of steeped in a sort of worldview that is extremely narrow-minded. It's interesting from the point of view that this is Adam Silver's first big scandal as commissioner. How is he going to handle this? Because this is going to set a precedent, I think, for his entire tenure as commissioner. I mean, this is his first big hurdle, and it's a big one. I mean, this is a huge issue. He's got to handle it quickly because obviously people are upset. And the other thing is, the players, Doc Rivers as coach, I mean, he signed a 3-year deal last year, and now he's talking like he doesn't want to be there.
Right.
And you can't blame him.
You can't blame
the players for either not playing well, not giving their all, or just not being engaged in the game, because, I mean, how can you really expect them to be? I mean, some of the things that they said were, you know, we're playing for each other, and this has almost brought us closer. And that's fair.
It's fine and dandy to say.
Exactly, but I don't know if that's really going to happen in practice, because, I mean, can you imagine if they win the title?
Right.
And they have to present the trophy to, you know.
He won't be there.
He won't be there, but, I mean, even just his...
That aura, that presence.
That black cloud hanging over the franchise is really going to kind of permeate the entire organization. So I think, It's interesting to see what Adam Silver is going to do. It's interesting to see how the players react to this and move forward from it, if they can this season or going into next year. And just the overall reaction to it has been so harsh and so quick and swift that it's going to be interesting to see what the powers that be do in terms of discipline and if he is even involved in the NBA from this point forward, which I don't think he will be.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing about Sterling is that this is a guy who's been fined before, not necessarily for racist remarks, but this is a guy who in 1982 was fined $10,000 after saying that the Clippers would finish in last place to order to draft an impact player. So this is an owner who probably has been questioned before. This has probably been an ongoing thing. I'm sure the team has known for years. Stephen A. Smith went on to say about when Baron Davis was there, his frustrations with Donald Sterling. So it doesn't come as a surprise to me that the team is upset. I mean, if you look at some of the interviews and some of the comments, this has been an ongoing culture for years, the frustrating thing with Donald Sterling. This last remark probably puts it over the edge. This is probably...
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. How I take all this is, one, like Matt said, it's interesting to see what Adam Silver is going to do. The second thing is I'm very interested to see whether the owner will do something himself before something else acts upon him. And we've seen when Riley Cooper made his racist remark, he went ahead and did something before the league act or before the team act. He went ahead and took a little bit of ownership for it. Remember his apology. Obviously, it was a little bit wish-washy, but he at least did something before. So the fact that Sterling is going quiet from his PR people is interesting, because I think by now, maybe you would see something. I don't know what you guys think.
For me, guys, what separates this incident from, honestly, any incident I've seen when it comes to just talking sports here, and because we've seen racist confrontations in other areas of sports, like the Riley Cooper thing. I mean, you know, where he said the N-word slipped out, you know, at a Kenny Chesney concert. This is in your face. Looking at what he said, this is in your face racism. The way he said it and the words he used, he said, you know, you shouldn't be around black people. You know what I mean? Why are you posting about black people? You know? And then he goes on to say, hey, it's kind of like a, like you said, a Southern plantation mindset. I feed them. I give them food. I give them clothing. What? Are we back in the slavery days here? This is so in your face and real. And that is why he's caught red-handed right now. If I was the man, I'd be going quiet too. I'd probably be taking a plane ticket over in China right now, because he's probably getting death threats left and right as we speak. And you can hear everything he's saying. It is so blunt and racist that you can't but to just turn a face of anger to it. And that's what separates this situation from any I've read about or encountered. And it's really rubbed everyone the wrong way. And then you eclipse in the fact that, again, the NBA is a black league. Let's just be real here. I mean, just about every team is predominantly African-American in the league right now. And when you have – and you got a black coach, for goodness sake. I mean, when you have that amount of African-Americans in a league and you make these type of comments, it just – It eclipses it to level 20, a level that's never been discussed about before in sports.
Now, do you guys think, listen to the audio. Matt and I were talking about this before we came on, Al, but Matt said that he just sounded really old, wasn't really with it. He wasn't mentally there. Like, he just physically wasn't kind of, I don't know, thinking about certain situations and just
he's racist.
Wasn't there.
He's racist.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
definitely. We're not wasn't trying to excuse that at all.
What, do you think he was drunk in the audio or something?
Well, I'm wondering if that may have been not an excuse, but I'm wondering if that may have been something that was there.
There is no excuse for what came out of that man's mouth, period. I don't care if he was drunk, if he was high. I don't care what the situation is. The fact that he made those comments show that there is some preconceived notion in his mind that he does feel that type of way. Without a doubt, there's no excuse, especially in the position that he is, the position of power that he has, being the owner, not a coach here, not a GM. You're an owner. You own this franchise,
right?
And
no,
the fact that you make those statements, it angered me. To
I
a
agree,
point.
But let me just put a different scenario at you, and this is why I'm bringing this up. with Rob Ford, this is outside of sports, but when Rob Ford made all of his quote-unquote drunken stupors, and when he said all of these remarks, he made racist remarks himself, there were a lot of things that Rob Ford said when he was drunk or high. Now, I'm not saying that that's an excuse for Sterling, but it will change the situation and what outcomes will happen, because when Rob Ford owns up to it...
What do you mean?
Rob Ford stayed mayor for a long time.
Alex, this is totally different from Rob Ford's situation.
I know that. I'm not comparing the two. But what I'm saying is I'm interested to see what happens, because Rob Ford was in a position of power. Rob Ford was the mayor. Donald Sterling is the owner. And although that Rob Ford made these drunken stupor remarks, it changed the situation in a way that he was still mayor.
There's no change in the situation at all. Compare the situation... He made racist remarks, completely dehumanizing black people,
right,
to the point where it was so in your face, there was no coming back and saving face. There's no excuse he can get out of it.
I'm not saying that, but...
What's the point then?
The point is, if someone else made a racist remark, or if someone without a position of power made some kind of... Let's say a player made a racist remark, and to the same extent that Sterling made, that player would probably instantly, maybe probably like an 82-season ban. It would be very severe. But what I'm saying is, when there's someone like an owner or someone like a mayor who holds a higher position of power, the outcome came. It's the same reason from when a murderer gets charged.
It's escalated because of the position that he holds.
Exactly. Right. Sure. But what I'm saying is, I'm interested to see the consequences from an owner or a politician compared to a regular player.
I can guarantee, and I go on record as saying this, I can guarantee he will no longer be affiliated with the NBA as we know it. There's no way he can keep his position as owner. There is no way he can keep his position in the NBA in any way, shape, or form. He'll kind of just fade into the abyss, take his money that he's earned over the years, and kind of just go on about his way. Because I tell you what, the repercussion that Adam Silver and his administration is about to hand down, I'm pretty sure is going to be so big and so insurmountable that he will have no affiliation with the league whatsoever, and I can pretty much guarantee that.
Yeah. And
if not,
I mean,
that's a problem with society.
Definitely. And, you know, even if you kind of try and paint it and say, you know, there are extenuating circumstances and he was kind of baited, because people have argued that he's been baited into saying these things by the ex-girlfriend. But even if that's true, he clearly thinks a certain way. Mm-hmm. And you know, the quotes from everyone who's spoken out on this says, this is no surprise. This is how it is. You know, Sean Livingston, who used to play for the Clippers, said it was probably disappointing to a lot of people, but you look at what's kind of gone on in the past, it's very unfortunate, but I think it kind of tells the same story as what's been told if you pull up the record. So it's not like this isn't something that has gone on probably for his entire time owning the Clippers. I think he bought them in 81. Mm-hmm. So it's been this culture that he has, you know, cultivated there. It's this poisonous, negative culture. I mean, there's a reason that the Clippers were the worst franchise in sports until he kind of took a back seat like 5 years ago. I mean, there's a reason that they've only been relevant, you know, in terms of win-loss recently. I mean, they were in the dumps for decades, and maybe they'll head back this way after this. I don't know. But it just seems like, I don't know how anyone could play for that guy. I don't know how anyone could want to go there. I mean, I don't know how Doc Rivers signed that contract to coach them.
Yeah, well, the thing
he
is,
he played there as a player. Right. You know, how would you not know that culture is there and want to avoid it at all costs?
Right. Well, the thing about it is, before these comments were made and he was caught saying this kind of stuff, I don't think, of course, there was a bad vibe there. But we didn't know that he was racist.
So this is just like the validation.
We didn't know that he was racist
of all
here.
Those kind of
right. Okay. It kind of validates everything. But we didn't know the man was racist until he came out and said what he said. Obviously, there probably was a bad vibe. You probably felt something, some type of way about him. But until it's in your sometimes things have to be in your face for you to open your eyes and realize what's going on. And this was one of those moments, I think. Because, you know, I've definitely been in situations where, going back to high school, where I felt as though there were some people, because I've encountered, let's be real here, I've definitely encountered racism, especially in high school, for me. And I've always kind of felt sometimes that, you know, I mean, I'm walking through the halls and this type of person feels some type of way about me. But until I found out that something was said about me in a racist matter and confirmed it with him, then it kind of hit me that said, okay, this is real. You actually said this. So again, my grandma always said, until it's in your face, it unlocks the shades for you. You may feel and think something, but until it's there and the proof is in the pudding, then it validates things. And I think the validation came in this. And I think, you know, again, the repercussions for this man are going to come down hard. And, you know, I can only imagine the punishment that Adam Silver is going to give. And this is a change in sport. This goes beyond basketball. This goes beyond sports. This goes and dives into a realm of our society and our culture and the way we view different ethnicities and minorities, and even beyond that, in society today. And it brings that conversation to the table, which I think it should, because, again, you know, we've come a long way. We've come a long way throughout our entire history, specifically here in North America. But, boy, do we still got a long way to go. And this is just one of those examples that kind of validates that.
It's crazy that he's lasted this long.
It is.
You know, because you read quotes from Sam Cassell, Elton Brand, and Corey Maggette complaining to Elgin Baylor about, you know, Sterling's behavior in the locker room. You see the Justice Department sued Sterling for housing discrimination because he refused to rent properties to blacks and Hispanics. It's like, how did this guy own an NBA franchise for over 30 years?
Right.
It does not add up. It's weird. The one guy who's kind of not getting mentioned at all is David Stern.
Right.
Who is the NBA commissioner. Like, how did he let this go on in his league for as long as it did? I mean, now, you know, his successor has to kind of pick up the pieces because it finally blew up.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been a ticking time bomb for 3 decades, and it just finally erupted and you know, broke the camel's back, so to speak. So I think it's weird to see that this was kind of allowed to happen in the NBA for as long as it has.
Exactly. It is so amazing that he's an owner and has these type of views about black people.
In one of the biggest markets
exactly.
in the country.
You have
one of the most diverse markets in the country.
Right, exactly.
And he owns an NBA franchise. It's just crazy.
I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. In the NBA, where, again, predominantly African-American, and you have these views, and I just don't get it. A lot is going to come out as this story proceeds, of course. I'm very interested to see how in the world the girlfriend got the audio of this.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, unbelievable. I watched something on, it was a Fox News interview with Donald Trump. Uh-huh. And that is a sentence I never thought I'd say. Never thought I'd say that, but I did. And they reported that it's possible that
set him up.
He actually asked to be recorded.
Really?
Because he said he was forgetful. Apparently they have like 100 hours, and this is all conjecture, according to this Fox News report. They have 100 hours of audio of them talking. So yeah, there's going to be a lot more. I have a feeling this is the tip of the iceberg.
Wow, that's unbelievable. If that's true, that's going to be. I can only imagine
brutal.
What else he said.
Yeah.
It seems to me that these are two unstable people. I mean, why would this girlfriend be with this guy who's so racist?
Then I see reports
that's
though
what
that
I'm saying.
His
like,
girlfriend said that they were never together or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. And this is an interesting story, to say the least. More will come as the days go by. And again, if you want to weigh in on it, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or you can always tweet me at AlMartinWKAR.org. Well, we're going to have to get to the wings tomorrow, guys. That took up a lot of our show, and deservingly so, man. It's really, really hot-button topic. Donald Sterling, his racist remarks. TMZ released new audio, I believe late last night or early this morning or something like that. 5 more minutes of Sterling going on and on and on about racist things, to say the least. And you can check that out. It's everywhere online. We'll get to the Wings tomorrow. Again, the Red Wings, of course, going out of the playoffs with a loss to the Boston Bruins over the weekend. We'll talk about that and highlight the women's golf team, Michigan State golf team, as they win yet another Big Ten title. Shout out to Stacy Slobotnik-Stoll and her entire squad. They are truly unbelievable. We'll try to get Stacy on the show tomorrow or Wednesday, so look forward to that. And, of course, you can be a part of Current Sports TV this Wednesday at 6 p.m. as I sit down with Mike Ferentino, the new captain of the MSU hockey team. You don't want to miss that and so much more. Again, go to WKR.org to be a part of that live studio audience. Packed week. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for everyone out there for tuning in. Thanks to Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, production assistants, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Monday. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day and be easy, people.